In a world that can be challenging, and at times unpredictable, it's hard to find moments to focus on what you need. Join Stephanie James on The Spark as she guides you to use your inner flame to ignite your best life. As a best-selling author, psychotherapist, transformational life coach, and international show host, Stephanie is dedicated to helping you create a life that takes you, your goals, and your passions to the next level, so you can live a life that is fully lit up and fully alive. She believes that your life is meant to be a beautiful expression of the things that light you up, that by living your dreams, you give permission to others to do the same. Are you ready to feel alive and inspired to fuel your dreams and put a fire behind your desires? Let's ignite a spark in one another that will illuminate the world. The Spark, with your host, Stephanie James, starts now.
Welcome to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James. So excited to have you here with us tonight. So thankful for you listeners. So just sending lots of love, lots of blessings your way. We have a really special guest tonight. I'm so excited to be here tonight with Rabbi Wayne Dossick. And we're going to be discussing his book, this amazing book, Radical Loving, One God, One World, One People. Welcome to the show, Rabbi. So grateful to have you here.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Well, let's dive in and talk about this book. What an incredible, you know, I think what's always incredible about books like this is you wrote this before the pandemic, and yet the concepts in here are so applicable to our world right now. And as you were writing this book, you know, what was it that was really inspiring you? I feel like, from the moment I opened the book, it was resonating with me. And you were talking about, you know, these challenges that we're going through and the diversity and this, you know, culture that we're living in where people are really differentiated. And there's so much conflict. And boy, now even more so.
Yes. You know, words have great power. And the rhetoric that we've been listening to for the last 4, 5, 6 years has been not inclusive, but exclusive. Mm-hmm. It's been rhetoric of division.
Yes.
It's been rhetoric that has demonized the other. And so we've had this tremendous rise in racism and sexism and nationalism and white supremacy and Islamophobia and neo-Nazism and neo-fascism and anti-Semitism. And we have been a country that, instead of being e pluribus unum, a country out of many, one, that melting pot that our founders envisioned, we have become a country of individual, selfish self-interests. So it's become a country not of us, but of me, me, me. Mm-hmm. Or conversely, not me. Hey, I'm not responsible. I'm the victim here. And so I wrote about that in Radical Loving, saying that this world has become a tiny little village, technologically a tiny little village, and the planet on which we live is in great, great peril. And so we either have to learn to live together again, lest we perish together. And so I wrote this as an aspirational book saying, hey, let's take a look at what's going on in this world and let's do something about it before it's too late. And then came the pandemic. And so I wrote an afterword to the book. And there it says, from this aspirational book, we were smacked in the face by reality. And just for example, one reality says, we have to reopen because I need to make money to feed my family. And the converse is, we need to reopen because I have to go to the beach and go to the bar dancing tonight. We have to reopen because I'm tired of taking care of my kids at home all the time, and I'm not a teacher to know how to do Zoom, as opposed to, we need to get our children the very best education possible. So it's exactly what we were talking about in the book. It's selfish self-interest versus the highest good, the common good, the greatest good. And that's the choice we have right before us right now. I don't want to wear a mask because my individual rights, my freedom is at stake. Of course I'll wear a mask because science tells us that's for the highest good, the common good, because the disease won't spread. Choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what an interesting time, you know, the pandemic, I feel like, has invited us all inward. And we had this opportunity where we were virtually locked in at times, where, you know, it became that, like, we actually did have that choice. We could do the inner work. We could, some people, be with themselves for the first time. Yeah. Or we could choose to continue to distract ourselves.
Well, you know, I in this book, Radical Loving, God talks to us. God talks to us. And somebody said to me, what chutzpah you have, what nerve, what boldness you have, thinking that God talks to you. Well, you know, God talks to each and every one of us all the time. You don't have to be a biblical prophet. You don't have to be Isaiah or Ezekiel or Jeremiah, Moses or Abraham or Jesus or Muhammad for God to talk to you. The reality is, you know, people always say, well, I pray. Okay, I pray, or I meditate. Okay, I meditate. But it has two parts. We know the first part. The first part is I talk to God and God listens. But there's a second part, which is God talks to me and I have to listen. So God talks to us all the time, either in words or in visions or in daydreams or night dreams. And God tells us what is good or what is not in our lives, what we should continue to do or what we should stop doing, the consequences one way or the other of what we do or don't do. And so in many, many ways, this book is prophetic, but I wouldn't call myself a prophet. I would just call myself, as we all are, a messenger of God, somebody who receives a message and gives it out. It may be that you give it out only to yourself in the darkness of night. It may be you give it over to your partner, your spouse, your children, your mother, your father. And it may be you give it out to a wider audience. And since I've had a bully pulpit, as they say, for the last 50 years or so, and I've written other books before, and I have places where people will sometimes listen to me, that I gave out this message that basically God gave me in all this time.
And, you know, I think that's such an important note, Rabbi, because I think that people get signs and as you said, visions and what I call downloads.
Right, exactly.
Same all word. The time. And, you know, we've heard such a negative connotation if you hear the word someone's a channeler. And I think at the same time, we need to be open channels.
That's what we are, of course. And actually, the word you used is perfect. This book began, it had its genesis in a kosher deli in New York, Thanksgiving of 2016. I'd always wanted to go to the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, always. And I never had been there. So I said to Ellen, my wife, one day, let's go. So we went. And so we wanted a traditional Thanksgiving dinner, go to a kosher deli. And we went in the middle of the afternoon, between the lunch and the dinner surges. And so we sit at a table. There weren't too many people in the restaurant. And our waiter comes up and his name's Mohammed. And he took our order and then he you know, went to the kitchen to put it in. And then he came back and totally uninvited. He pulled up a chair and started talking to us just like that. Once that happens, you listen. You listen. It was right after, this is November after the 2016 election when Trump had just been elected. And Mohammed started talking to us about how afraid he was for himself and his community because Trump had been talking about the Muslim ban and demonizing the other. And he wanted to know, he said, what did we do? I work hard. My parents work hard. My brothers and sisters work hard. We're a community. We go to our mosque. We send our children to school. We try to give them a good education. Why is this happening? We're just human beings like everybody else. And all of a sudden, the download began. And I said to Mohammed, could I have a piece of paper? And he took the Thanksgiving Day special menu and turned it over, which is a little blank card like this. I pulled the pen out of my pocket and started writing. And I kept writing, and he kept bringing more backs of menus. And I wrote and wrote and wrote. And that was the beginning of this book. So it was indeed absolutely a download, because Mohammed and all the rest of us, regardless of where we are on the spectrum of life, we all deserve an answer to that question. And this book tried to become the answer to the question.
That's such a powerful story. I love that. And I think that, you know, you bring up an important point as well. It's this thing around that here you are, you know, a Jewish rabbi, and yet the message in this book is that it's not just about one religion being the religion, or, you know, that it's when you talk about it's one God, you know, you talk about, so it's, we have to have this, I guess what I would call, you know, like absolute love of other and self and God that becomes that collective consciousness.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And thank you for reading so carefully. I appreciate it. The reality is that the theme song of this world right now has become, my God's better than your God, and my scripture's better, and my principles and values are better, and my religion is better, and my culture is better, and my country is better, and God blesses me and loves me more than God blesses you and loves you because I'm better than you are. That seems to be the theme of the world. Of course, that's absolutely impossible. Impossible, because there is one God. One God who's the creator of us all. Now, we call God by many different names, and we approach God in many different ways. Just like in a family, the male parent may be called dad or pops or father. The mother, mommy, mama, mother. Same person. Same God, regardless of what we call that God, regardless of how we approach that God, because we all build different pathways, which are beautiful, because oneness does not mean sameness. But there is one God who loves us all, who created us all, who does not play favorites, who says to us, I created you equally. You are all my children, and I love all my children, and I hope you will love me, and I hope you will learn to love each other. So create whatever name you want for me. Create whatever pathway you want toward me. When I taught for 17 years at the University of San Diego, which is a local private Catholic diocesan university. And one of my closest friends and dearest friends in the whole world is a Jesuit priest. I preached from the pulpit of the Immaculata, standing next to a statue of Jesus. That's a long way to come from the kid on the south side of Chicago who was beaten up by the Catholic kids because they had learned from their priests and nuns that I, Wayne Dossick, had personally killed their Lord. Right? That happened. Wow. I mean, you're too young, but that happened in the late 40s, the 50s, early 50s. So here's where we got fooled. Here's where we got fooled. And world religions, listen up carefully. We got fooled because we thought that when there was a new revelation, it was better than the last. So the Hebrew, the ancient Hebrews said, our revelation, that is the Hebrew Bible, is better than what the pagans taught. And Christianity came along and said, our revelation, the New Testament, is replacement theology. Still call that to this day. Replacement theology is better than what the Hebrew Bible says. And Islam came along and said, the Quran is better than everything that came before it. And the Hindu text and the Buddhist text and the Native American tribes, everybody says, mine's better, mine's better. No, they are not better. They're not replacements. They are additions to. There's new revelation for a new time, for evolving human consciousness. The more we know, the more we learn, the more the mysteries of the universe are revealed to us, God then gives us more to know and more to behave with and more to love with. And so we've been fooled. And part of the message of this is get rid of the triumphalism, get rid of the superiority. We are all one. Every teacher, again, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, is a world master. And wisdom does not belong to any one group. World wisdom belongs to all of us. And we have everything to learn from world masters. You know, Thomas Jefferson wrote what he called, what we now call the Jefferson Bible. He took, he bought two copies of the Bible, of the New Testament, and he cut with scissors what he thought were just the teachings of Jesus. Not the Gospels, not the Gospel writers, not the additions to or the interpretations of Jesus, but just what Jesus had to say. And he pasted, cut and pasted, and that's the Jefferson Bible. Well, first of all, if you read the teachings of Jesus very carefully, 85% of them come right out of the Hebrew Bible. And of the other 15%, I can agree with 11%. 10%, 11%. You know, it's all the same because we are all one. And this is a call to oneness consciousness.
Yes. Yeah. So I want to ask you, Rabbi, in your own journey, you know, as I hear you, you know, being this young boy in Chicago being beat up by some Catholic boys, you know, how did you come to this understanding of oneness?
Well, first of all, thank God, Christianity began to come to the understanding. Beaten up when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. In high school, when we were passing between periods of this 5-story building in 4 minutes from the first floor gym to the 5th floor study hall, this girl comes running up to me and said, Wayne, I forgive you. I forgive you. Now, maybe there were some girls in that school who had reason to forgive me, but she wasn't one of them. So I said, Bonnie, what is it? She said, I forgive you for killing Christ. I said, what are you talking about? That was 2,000 years ago. First of all, he's a good Jewish boy who made good. Second of all, I wasn't there. I didn't know him. I certainly didn't kill him or anybody else. And the Jews didn't kill Christ. The Romans killed Christ. And she said, no. I just heard on my little transistor radio, you're too young to remember those, right?
I know those.
That the Pope said we could forgive the Jews for killing Christ. That, of course, was the early 60s. It was Vatican II, Pope John the 23rd. And so that was the beginning. The beginning that wound up as a rabbi teaching in the faculty of a Catholic university, the courses in Jewish studies, and preaching from the pulpit of the Immaculata. So, look, Father O'Leary and I, my dear friend, we hung out together. People saw us hanging out together. We would eat in the deli together. We were in the cafeteria. We would walk in. We would teach each other's classes back and forth. So we're walking on campus one day, and this young man comes running up to us and says, Father, Rabbi, could I talk to you? Sure. He said, you know, I'm a junior undergraduate here. I came from a place where I had never met a Jew before in my life. And Father O'Leary said, I was 21 years old before I ever met a Jew. And he said, truth be told, said this young man, I've had some prejudice against Jews. But I see the two of you walking together and hanging out together, eating sandwiches together, and telling jokes together. And the two of you are a living sermon. And I guess if the two of you can be friends, I can meet some Jews and maybe make new friends. That's it. It's one to one, person to person, understanding each other as a child of God. And so that revelation unfolds and unfolds and unfolds, and we have nothing, nothing, nothing to be afraid of. Just because someone looks different or behaves differently or speaks a different language or has a different job or has a different color to the skin or hair, doesn't make any difference. We're all children of the one God.
Beautiful. And we need to take a break. Thank you so much. This is just an amazing conversation. So join us for the next part of talking with Rabbi Daszak about radical loving. Really an amazing book and an amazing conversation. We'll see you after the break.
TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James, and I'm here with Dr. Wayne Daszak. And we're talking about his amazing book, Radical Loving, One God, One World, One People. Such an important book for our times. So we've been talking about having, you know, the importance of having this one consciousness. And I know like Larry Dossey calls it one mind, that we really are a part of this one mind. So the question for me becomes, how do we access this? You know, if we really are in this world of divisiveness where it's us and them, how do you see us coming together? What does that look like?
One of the issues is how do we define radical loving? That's the name of the book,
yeah.
Radical Loving. And there are many, many ways. Well, one is what we've been talking about, is the reality of knowing that there is one God who loves us and who loves us with greatest love, with eternal love. And another way is that to know that God is reflected in the face of every human being. So if you look in the mirror, Stephanie, you see Stephanie and you see God. And if I look in the mirror, I see Rabbi Wayne and I see God. And therefore, if I look in your face or you look in mine, we see God. Which means that God is in each and every human being. And God, in the face of God, is reflected in each and every human being. And if you remember that, the only possible response to seeing the face of God is love. So that means when the teller in the bank is taking forever and you're steaming in the back of the line, or you go into the convenience store and the teenage clerk can't make change for a dollar bill without using a calculator, or somebody cuts you off in traffic, you say, that's a child of God. And you can't get angry because you can only react with love. And you could say, well, maybe that person is having a bad day just like I've had bad days. But regardless of the ability or not, that person is a child of God. So part of radical loving is understanding that each of us is a reflection of God. And therefore, radical loving means to treat each human being's life and make it as precious to us as our own. So if we have self-love, which I know is a difficult thing to achieve, but if we have self-love, then we have to have love for every other human being as well. Because every other human being is just like us. You know, the golden rule, which in one form or another is in every faith community, love your neighbor as yourself, or you're the golden right, Love your neighbor because he or she is just like you. But just like you doesn't mean that sameness. It means the recognition of the humanity of that person. So, for example, if you're having a bad day or a bad week and you're my friend, and I say to myself, self, I say, let's do something to help Stephanie feel better. Now, if I were unhappy or depressed or frightened the way she is, what would make me feel happy? Well, tickets to a baseball game. So I'll get tickets to the Padre game, or in my youth, the Cubs or the White Sox. And I'll take Stephanie to a baseball game. I'll get her a hot dog. I'll get her a beer, a bag of peanuts. We'll have a great time. She'll feel much better. But I didn't take into account what Stephanie wants.
Right.
And maybe you want tickets to the opera or the ballet or to the symphony or who knows what you know or love. If I love you, I should know what you know or love. So we have to take into account each other's beingness, each other's godness. So the late and great Rabbi David Cooper called it godding. So it's an active word. It's not just a and it means also that we have to create sacred community, not just to individuals, but to everyone. So I'll give you an example. When my kids were little, we tried to emulate market. He would buy two bunches of vegetables or two pieces of meat because he would take one for himself and give one to the hungry in his neighborhood. Nice, right? So we did that. We said, okay, when the kids, when we go to the grocery store, we'll buy one extra item of perishable food, non-perishable food, a can of tuna fish, a box of mac and cheese, a box of cereal, a jar of peanut butter. Won't even take it into the house. Leave it in a brown paper sack, a grocery sack in the trunk of the car. And when we collect the two or three bags, we take it to the local food pantry. Well, I'm in the store one day with my then five-year-old, who's in his late 40s now. But I took a box of Cheerios off the shelf. And I said to him, honey, how about this for our food gift this week? And this little precocious kid grabbed the cereal out of my hand, said no, and put it back on the shelf, and reached up on his tippy toes and grabbed another box of cereal and held it up to me and said, this will be our food gift this week. And I said to him, what's the difference? It's a box of cereal. And he said to me, look, Dad, there are hungry kids out there too. And kids like sugar frosted flakes better than we like Cheerios. In an instant, that kid taught me to see not a category of people, not the hungry, the homeless, the poor, the needy, but a kid who likes one kind of cereal better than the other. And so if you're making up a Thanksgiving basket, we often do that, right? Lots of churches and synagogues and social service agencies. So you give a turkey, you give yams, you give cranberries, but give a bottle of sparkling apple cider. Give a nicely decorated cake. Give a bag of colorful jelly beans, because people who need a turkey also would like to celebrate Thanksgiving and not just be fed. You know, when we give away old clothing, a pair of pants, a shirt, a blouse, a skirt. You know, if somebody needs a pair of pants, he probably needs a pair of socks too. We never think to give away a pair of socks, but give away a pair of socks. Or if you don't think that's sanitary enough, go to the store, buy a couple pair of socks and add it to your clothes pile. And when you go to a hotel, the hotel doesn't expect you to steal the towels, but those little bottles of shampoo and conditioner and those little bars of soap, they expect you to take those. So take them and collect them And when you have three or four or five, take them to the local shelter. Because while we spend a lot of money for our designer shampoos, people in the shelter may not have a shampoo at all. And one of those little bottles could be one or two or three head washes, hair washes for somebody who needs a shampoo. So those are the kinds of things that we can do. Find a need. I call it FANAMI. Find a need and meet it. Mm-hmm. And we can do it on a very individual basis as well, too. God forbid someone dies. And you go to the mourner and you say, anything you need, just let me know. I'll do anything for you. And the reality is, no one ever asks.
Yeah.
Our house burned down back in 1996. Our house burned down in the Southern California wildfire. Burned to the ground. We lost everything. And we had nowhere to live. And one of the kindest, gentlest, sweetest, and most wealthy men I knew came to me and said, Rabbi, I feel so terrible for you. What's mine is yours. Anything you want, you just ask me. So what was I going to say? Take me to dinner? Buy me a suit? Build me a house? I mean, what am I going to say to the man?
Yeah.
So I wound up saying nothing. But you can say to the mourner, instead of saying anything you want where you know you're not going to be asked, you can say, I understand your Uncle Charlie's coming in for the funeral. Tell me his plane arrangements. I'll go to the airport and pick him up. Or maybe is your good suit still at the cleaners? I'll go pick it up for you. Or don't worry about the kids tonight. I'll take them for pizza and a movie. That's finding a need and meeting it and dealing with another human being as we would like to be dealt with, oneness consciousness, one God, one world, one people.
Yeah, so beautiful. You know, and so I feel like there's actually the golden rule, and then there's like this version of the golden rule, which is also, it's not just do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's do unto others as they would have done unto them.
Right. Perfect. Perfect. Excellent yeah. interpretation. You become a biblical interpreter now.
But, you know, I just feel like, you know, I mean, what beautiful examples how to tune into people and what their actual needs are. And I feel like that's something that people struggle with, you know, when someone has lost someone in particularly, or like in your example of the fire, people don't know how to help.
Right.
So to say, you know, yeah, you might say, how can I help you? And the person doesn't even know.
Right.
And, they're overwhelmed.
And for some people, it's very hard to take. I mean, Ellen and I have been in the helping professions all our lives. And all of a sudden, we were in need of help. And we knew how to help others. We didn't know how to ask for help for ourselves. It's very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. You know, God and the universe give us lots of opportunities to grow and stretch. And so here it is, what you are teaching, you also got to experience and learn at a deeper level.
Right.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, this balance between individual rights and freedoms and the common good that you talk about in the book. So what is the highest good?
The highest good is each and every person striving for the unity of the community. The only way to get together is to get it together, right? My Rebbe taught me that. My teacher taught me that. So the highest good, the common good, is the best for everyone to get collectively. We all need individual rights. We all need individual freedoms. And yet we need to create the collective whole. So, for example, when I was a kid, the highlight of my childhood was the year 1959 when the Chicago White Sox won the American League pennant. And in those days, we were a front porch community. We didn't know it except in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
But now we know it. So I remember one weekend, a four-game series against the dreaded Yankees, where everybody in the neighborhood, everybody on my block, was sitting on the front, literally the front porch, all with our little transistor radios. And every time something good happened, you could hear the cheer go out through the entire neighborhood. The entire neighborhood. Now, that was good until the night the White Sox won the pennant. And Mayor Daley, the late Mayor Daley, the first Mayor Daley, remember, he was the one who taught us to vote early, vote often. And he was teasing, but it's come to be and it's horrible now. But nevertheless, he was so happy that he had the air raid siren turned on. Now, my grandmother, she should rest in peace, knew nothing about baseball. And she was an immigrant from communist Soviet Russia.
Wow.
She thought the Russians were coming. She thought it was an air raid siren.
No.
So it was a little too much for the community at that moment. But that was the community. We knew all the players because they weren't getting these humongous salaries, and they stayed in the community during the winter, and they went to the Cub Scouts and the Girl Scouts and the churches and the synagogues and gave talks and shook hands and gave autographs. And this one worked at an insurance company, and this one worked at a car lot. And one guy on the team, his grandma lived in our neighborhood. So anytime he came to visit grandma, he'd come to the playground, throw out a couple of balls that he would give the kids. And even he would hit the grounders to us once in a while. I mean, it was amazing. You know, and during the winter, we would see him there. And then in the summer, he'd be on the field with the White Sox. What happened? What happened was free agency in baseball. 1972, the Kurt Flood case at the Supreme Court. Now, the America was built on the backs of unions. I like unions. I support unions. But sometimes it's not so helpful, because what happened is the players now, instead of caring about the goodness of the whole team, care about their own statistics so that they can sell themselves to the highest bidder come the next contract. Mm-hmm. So again, it's individual rights versus the collective. Now, that's just in baseball, and it's a game, I understand. But then it comes to the game of life. And so you have this Second Amendment to the United States Constitution, 1791. The right to bear arms in 1791 had nothing to do with AK-47s. And A-15s. The Supreme Court has decided that is part of the Second Amendment. And I say, get the damn guns off the streets. And so your individual right to own a gun ends at the life of a child on a playground. Just like at one time, the Supreme Court said that your individual rights end at yelling fire in a crowded theater. Mm-hmm. My individual rights end at the beginning of your nose. What's the highest good for this community, of ours? Mm-hmm. Killings in our theaters and in our grocery stores and in our playgrounds. Our children's playgrounds have become killing fields. It's crazy. It's nuts. And so we have to do something about that. And we have to say, yes, you want to have a gun. You want to protect yourself. You want to go out hunting. There are all kinds of ways that we can form the rules to be part of 2021, not 1791.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So powerful. My goodness. We have to take another break. This is such an important conversation. Thank you all for listening. And Rabbi, my gosh, you know, I'm hearing this and I think, again, I mean, I want to talk to you about this when we get off a break. How do we start hearing messages like this, but not just hearing it? How do we start assimilating this into who we are so that we're being action oriented, we're being heart oriented, and we really are doing this thing you're talking about. We are living radical loving. So all that and more when we come back from the break.
Get empowered on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
So we're back. This is Stephanie James, and I'm back with Rabbi Wayne Dossick. And I am actually, you know, I've just been so moved in this conversation, and I'm just so thankful for you listeners being here with us. Would love to hear any of your thoughts. Please feel free to contact me at stephaniejames.world, and we can continue the conversation. Rabbi, let's talk about we're talking about how can we start, you know, taking some of these ideas and implement them in our own lives? How can we start integrating this? And I know, you know, there are people that will hear this that will just, their hearts might be so shut down, or their minds have been so infiltrated with what they deem to be certain truths that they're not really hearing this. How do we start that opening, and how do we start implementing these ideas?
It's really so easy. It really is. So make sure that you recycle the plastic water bottle that you use. Make sure that you recycle the toner cartridge that you take out of your printer. Because the planet on which we live is in incredible peril right now. We joke about it, we laugh about it, people say, ah, it's not true. We don't have that much time. We either turn it around, or this planet will implode. Or actually, it will deplode. I don't know if that's a word,
but yeah,
it will disintegrate.
Yeah.
Because a puff of pollution that comes out of a chimney in Pittsburgh is the smoke goes to Paris. And a plastic bottle that's thrown off Alaska winds up in a whale's mouth in South America. So we can stop doing the things. Now, we may not have the power to stop the puff of chimney smoke, although we can say to that corporation, we're not going to buy your goods until you fix up your chimneys. But we can also do the little things. We can walk more than we ride, more than we drive. We can become a walking community again. I know that's very hard in the suburbs, but maybe we have to refocus on the way we build our houses and our commercial institutions, and make houses within walking distance of grocery stores and dry cleaners and places like that. And we certainly can, as I said, not throw that plastic bottle into the ocean, and not throw that toner cartridge into the garbage, where it is going to, that plastic is going to take 1,000 years to disintegrate in a landfill, as opposed to, you know, our local office store says, bring us your used cartridges. And they take them and they recycle them, and they use the plastic for other things. I just saw last night on television, people who are growing, I don't even know what to call it, but pods of various kinds of foods that can feed us, vegetation foods that can feed us. And so we won't have to use as much grassland to feed the animals. There are all kinds of possibilities that we can do, both as individuals, as a community, and as a world, to save the world in which we live. So go outside. Go outside and look at this beauty, this absolute beauty, and reframe it in your mind. To say, let's say you're taking a walk with your child or your grandchild, and your kid says to you, hey, mom, hey, dad, hey, papa, hey, grandma, look at that tree over there. Boy, is that a big tree. And you can say, yeah, it is. And what a gift God gave us. And instead of remembering your fifth grade lesson on trees, or it's third grade these days, that I can tell you because of the bark and the shape of the leaves that must be an oak tree, you can say, what a great gift God has given us. Look at that tree. First of all, it's beautiful, like you just said, my baby. And it has a sturdy trunk. If you're tired, you can rest against the trunk. And it has leaves to shade us if we're hot and tired. And it has fruit that can feed us or quench our thirst. Bless you, tree. Thank you, God. That's a simple reframing. Now, if we go out and we do that, how could we do anything but love that tree? Because it too is a reflection of God. Because everything, everything, everything is God. You and I are God. This desk is God. Science calls it a faster, slowly moving molecules. We call it God. And so if we do that, if we see the Godness of everything, the face of God in everything, how can we do anything but try to save this planet on which we live, this precious planet on which we live?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, two of the things that came up for me while you were talking is one from the movie, The Moses Code. I don't know if you've seen that movie. It, at one point, one of the people on the film, it's a documentary, says that he took the phrase from the Bible, I am that I am, and put a comma after I am that, pause, I am, and used that as he would walk around town. And he said, whether it was a homeless person or a millionaire, a woman, you know, a Black person, whatever it was, you know, whoever showed up in his path, he would look at that person and say, I am that I am.
That's brilliant. Brilliant.
And so to have that connectedness, you know, and that's, I think that's one of the ways that we can start training our brain, start training our heart as we start, you know, and we could do it at the scientific level with, you know, whenever we're in contact. And even right now, even though we're on Zoom, they say anytime that our attention is focused like this, like you and I are actually exchanging subatomic particles with each other.
Right.
So in actuality, we are becoming one another.
Exactly. Exactly. And therefore, one of the things that I talk about in Radical Loving is appreciating your lineage and your legacy. So I've made a list for myself of all my teachers in the broadest sense of the word, going all the way back to my biblical teachers, Abraham and Moses, and the people from whom I've learned from antiquity, whose books I've read, and the teachers of my tradition, and my own teachers, and my family, and my closest friends, and my cherished cabinet of advisors and mentors. I just went to the 90th birthday party of one of my teachers and mentors. And some of my students from whom I have learned so much. I read that list every day. I read that list every day. It's in this little booklet I've made up for myself. It's in this list every day. And I give thanks because I'm part of that lineage and legacy, stretching all the way back to the very first people on this earth and stretching, I hope, forward. So on one hand, I'm in gratitude. And on the second hand, I'm in great humility because I know that my little tiny part of this world has to be part of that chain, so that it doesn't end in me. Therefore, I recycle. I write books like this, and I talk to wonderful people like you, and I try to make my contribution in the way I can, and each of us is unique, and each of us makes in his or her own way a contribution to the ongoing process of a world of peace and harmony and decency and dignity and justice and righteousness and compassion and love.
Yeah. Yes. You know, it reminds me of the metaphor of that, you know, if like I would call it the spark. So that's the essence within us, which I call like the God spark that's within each of us. And so that God within all of us, like each one of us are drops of water in this collective ocean that is us, that is God.
Right.
And so, I mean, so there is no separation. And then the importance, though, of each one of us, we can't take all the drops of water. If we all take the separate drops of water out of the ocean, it evaporates. There's right. nothing left. And so each of our individual contributions matter. And so doing our own healing work, like you were saying in the beginning of our interview, you know, loving ourselves, not in the selfish pursuit of loving ourselves and being self-centered, but truly, I think, nurturing that relationship with self and God within, then we are able to be like the pebble in the pond and those concentric circles of love and healing that we've now put within us, we can give to others more fully.
Right. And it's exactly like, you know, I know it's a hackneyed story already, but it's like the little boy who goes to the seashore and sees starfish on the sand, and he picks up the starfish and he throws them back into the ocean. And somebody says to him, "What are you doing there? Thousands and thousands of starfish that have washed up on the sand. You can't possibly throw them all back in." And he said, "No, I know that. I understand that. But it makes a difference to this one starfish."
Mm. Love right. that. Love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that, you know, one of the things that people talk to me about is, you know, feeling overwhelmed with how to make this change, you know, that people do get very, you know, there's so much fear mongering in our media and things can look really dismal. And yes, you know, as you were saying, there is a call to the urgency of this because this is dire. This is important. How do we move out of that framework of, well, what, you know, really what, how do I matter? Or what does my contribution matter? Or the world's kind of doomed anyway. What you would know, you say to that?
There's this great story of, I don't have the quote exactly, but it's from Robert Jastrow, who was the director of NASA, a physicist who was director of our space administration. And he said something like, the scientists have been climbing up the mountain for all this time, trying to reach the top of the mountain scientifically. And we get to the peak and look over, and there are the theologians who have been sitting there for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
So there's ancient wisdom and there is newfound wisdom that comes with every generation. That's the new revelation that we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. We do it because it's one step at a time. It's not a giant leap. It's one step at a time. So, you know, when Neil Armstrong said this is one giant leap for mankind, how many steps did it take to get to that giant leap, right? It's just simply a commitment to not letting things roll along as they are, to not giving in to fear. The only response to hatred, to anger, to fear is love. If you send hatred out to the world, it spirals back to you. Mm-hmm. If you send love out to the world, it spirals back to you. I remember back to 1987. You may remember this. It was the harmonic convergence.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Uh-huh.
A bunch of us stood around the whole globe, held hands and sang songs trying to bring peace to the world. And the world laughed at us. Mm-hmm. And so what happened? Within months and a couple of years, the Soviet Union fell. The satellite countries around the Soviet Union fell. Blacks and whites started riding the bus together in Johannesburg. Protestants and Catholics stopped fighting with each other in Northern Ireland. And every once in a while, Israelis and Arabs sat down at peace talks. Now, did that all happen because we sang songs and held hands? Of course not. But we sent a love vibration out to the world. And that love vibration begins to spiral and to come back. There's a great line in the Bible from the prophet Isaiah who says, what do the angels do in heaven? What do they have to do? What's their job? So some of them, he says, stand on either side of the heavenly throne. This is all metaphoric, of course, but stand on the other side of the heavenly throne and shout back and forth to each other. The Hebrew, kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. English, holy, holy, holy. Latin, sanctus, sanctus, sanctus. The holiness of God. And that's the love vibration. And that love vibration comes to earth. And if we just let it sink into earth, nothing will happen. But we have to catch it and then send the love vibration back to the heavenly throne. So then the sage asks, so what does God do with all the prayers? What does God do with all the prayers that come up to the heavens every day? So again, another group of angels stand around the heavenly throne and take all the prayers and weave them into a crown and put that crown on God's head. So God's godness comes from the interaction with us. The love vibration coming from God to us and the love vibration coming from us to God.
Beautiful. You know, I appreciate this conversation in so many ways. And I know the listeners will get so, so much out of this. And I'm as we're running out of time now, I guess one of the things I want to make sure is if there's anything that you want to share that we haven't covered, that you feel like is an essential message that you want listeners to get, what would that be?
What a great interview question. That's true. You've heard it all. You really have, my dear friends. You've heard it all. It's just a question of, do you have the courage? Do you have the vision to do what Stephanie does, to do what I try to do? And that is to make your contribution to a just and peaceful world. And if so, the book is full of suggestions. We got to just a few of them.
Yeah.
There's also a CD that we made. I know CDs are ancient and antiquity things, but there are downloads that we made. The website will be up within a week or so. It's called radicallovingbook.com. Radicallovingbook.com. We made a CD of 21 chants because chants enter into our beings. Chants enter into our souls. Chants are our channel between us and God. So there are 21 chants. Four or five of them you can listen to, as we used to say in the old South Side of Chicago, free for nothing. And the others you can buy as a download or as a hard copy CD, which we'll mail to you. And with the download come all the lyrics. It's all in English, all in English. And with the CD, we would send you the lyrics. And some of these chants, here's, you know, we talked about awesome holiness, which is the twin of radical loving. So holy, holy, awesome holiness, holy, holy, awesome holiness, or with greatest love, eternal love, greatest love, eternal love, greatest love, eternal love, greatest love, eternal love. There are songs to sing that hopefully will help you bring this into your everyday consciousness.
Well, that just warmed my whole heart hearing you sing. I am excited. So I'm writing that down, radicallovingbook.com.
Right.
Is the website.
Be up in a week or so.
Wonderful. And where can people get the book?
The book is on all the online booksellers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.com, all the online booksellers. A number of bookstores have it. If not, they can order it for you. And if you're in the Southern California area, give me a call, come to the house, buy a book.
Well, and Radical Loving, what a great, it's almost to me that this is a great manuscript or a workbook of how to move forward in our changing world. Thank you so much, Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
That's stephaniejames.world. And tune in next week at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, only on transformationtalkradio.com. Shine on!
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers. and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.